Everyone, welcome back in another episode of the Wobcast 2.0 coming at you and coming fast. It's your host, Wobby, joined as always by my partner and co-host, Giles, as we come off of the Easter holiday and a fun weekend, hopefully for you all with family and friends and lots of football talk and back into business with the NFL draft now, less than a month away. Everyone looking forward to that, including yours truly and Giles, because it provides us great fodder and great content. It's the well that we can keep going back to and we keep coming up with profit. So let's continue our discussion about the NFL draft and the Minnesota Vikings, and we bring in Giles now. Hey, partner, how's it going?
Hey, happy Monday. Ironically, I'm just sitting here on my phone here. We're recording this here at like 7:32 here in the morning, and there's breaking news for the Minnesota Vikings.
What is it?
Might affect draft news. We're trading for Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, wow.
Yeah. Oh, it's April Fool's. I forgot. Yeah, no, that's too bad. Oh, shoot. That would have been great.
You got me. I mean, we're all excited about the prospects of Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, whoever, but I think we'd be a little bit more if it was Pat Mahomes coming to town.
Oh my gosh, that would be the best news. Merry Christmas. That would be a game changer for Minnesota Vikings. Yes. I have to believe you'd have to throw up a Herschel Walker type trade offer in order to get it in the building, but I think that one might end a little bit differently.
I think so. I think it was last year on April Fool's when we were hanging with friends and one of the friends was like, oh guys, and he read a supposed Adam Schefter tweet, which ended up being an April Fool's joke, but it was that the New England Patriots had come to an agreement with the Green Bay Packers to acquire Aaron Rodgers in a trade.
Yeah,
you know, and Bill Belichick gets his next quarterback. And
the way
our friend read the tweet from Schefter, I'm like, that those aren't the words that Schefter uses. So it was not a very well executed April Fool's. It must have, I don't know if it was AI or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's not how Schefter
that's not
talks.
Shefty.
No, that's not how he talks. They're just, if you follow it the way you follow it, the way I follow it, a lot of our listeners follow it, you just know that doesn't sound like him.
And it didn't Something's sound askew like here.
Him. Yeah, yeah. So it did not trick me. And truthfully, Giles, you did not trick me on Patrick Mahomes right there. So
well, I shoot. Saw right there. There's always next year.
if you're going to use that around the office later today, you got to sharpen it up a little bit.
Yeah. I'll go in the bathroom and practice.
Okay. All right. So I'm thinking let's share some of our crowdsourcing, because we probably have been around a lot of people. I was telling you before we started recording, we went to sort of an indoor water park, amusement park over the weekend. We saw family at Easter on Sunday. So obviously, naturally, lots of Vikings discussion with people I don't know and then with family and friends. So I've got a few. I kept track of what I was hearing, Giles, and I want to share some of it with you. All right. You want to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
On this? All right.
Let's go for it.
So there's no doubt, I think, that the general consensus is the Vikings are intending to move up. Okay. So what I found, and I don't think this will surprise you, but, you know, we're not talking about like the way we've moved up so many times in the past with whether it's Rick or Quezzy, like moving up or back, you know, three or four spots. Like, people think the Vikings are moving up into the top five or three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
And I got to give you credit, Giles, because you've sort of thought this for a while. You were thinking this even before they made the trade with Houston to get two first round picks. So you've been picking up what they're putting down for a while, but now I think everyone is onto it. Now, when you're talking about moving from 11 to 3 or 4 or 5, that's a significant trade. And not everyone is always going to be on board with that, because the price tag is steep for that. And anytime you get a price tag that steep, there's sticker shock to that. And I think that automatically fractures the fan base into being for it or against it, with good reasoning on both sides. I really didn't find anyone, Giles, who's opposed to what the Vikings are potentially trying to pull off here by moving up this high in the draft to absolutely take a quarterback.
Yep.
I mean, with the Kirk Cousins thing, it's a lightning rod situation. With any draft-related situation, you've got divergent opinions and sometimes trivergent or quadvergent opinions, right? I don't I don't really pick up on that. I think everyone's on board with this. What are you feeling that too?
I am feeling that across the board. I've talked to Minnesota Vikings fans. I've talked to Dallas Cowboys fans. I actually have a friend in Dallas, Texas, that's actually a Chiefs fan. He thinks that they're going to go for the three-peat this year, Brett Burris. And he was talking about the Minnesota Vikings, thinking if you're going to try to repeat what the Kansas City Chiefs are trying to do, you got to go get your guy, right? So As long as you hit on that, there's no amount of draft capital or cap space that you can spend that is not worth it. If you get your guy that changes your franchise, I think everyone in the collective NFL scheme and universe would agree you would give up whatever necessary to get Patrick Mahomes in the building. I mean, when you look at this past offseason, postseason, specifically in the playoffs, the Kansas City Chiefs overcame multiple teams that, in my opinion, were better than them. And he overcame all of those things. I was actually rooting against them. I'm like, there's no way the Chiefs are going to win. The Ravens are better. All these teams are better than the Chiefs, and the Chiefs overcame it. So All that to say, I think that factors back into your calculations. Is this worth it? If you get your guy, it's worth it. Now, then that factors into your level of certainty that this is your guy, right? I think there's some level of question mark on where do you take them. I think everyone that I've talked to has been willing to trade up. It's just, where do you trade up to? Do you need to trade up to number two? Do you trade up to five? If all the guys are created equal, sure, let's trade up to five and just pick the last guy on the board. But there's a pretty high likelihood that they like one and not the other. So what happens if that guy is off the board? What do you do? Do you just roll with Sam Darnold and go into next year? Do you still take a stab? There's obviously a huge decision tree that happens here, considering how convoluted the entire top five is when it comes to teams that are currently there, teams that are vying to get into a top five position, having to overpay because you're trying to outbid another team. There's a lot of different factors that goes into this formula.
Yep, you're right. So reading, you know, just my sense on it, and this is from being connected with people still. This is from my intuition. This is from reading between the lines at press conferences and media availability. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm sure they did their due diligence on Caleb Williams, but I don't think he's someone they've talked about because they assume he's gone. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they have an opinion on Caleb Williams. I think they love Drake May. I think they diet love J.J. McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they're enamored at all with Jaden Daniels. So,
I agree.
Okay. So to me, and they have two first-round picks. So to me, that sets up a situation in this draft where what Washington does at two will dictate what the Vikings do. And after Washington does that, the Vikings hold the cards and control the next big move. Mm-hmm. And they can do nothing. They can control it by doing nothing and therefore ceding control to other teams to do what they want to do. Or they can do something with, you know, after two.
Yep.
But I think it's going to be their choice. I think, and I think the reason they have the hammer is they've got the two first round picks by way of the trade with Houston, and they still have their first next year. So I think the only way they can't have the best trade offer is if the Giants come to the table and say, we're in the mix for a quarterback, we'll come up from six. Because they're only, like, to move up from six is much simpler, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't have to give up as much. So as long as the Giants stay committed to Daniel Jones and don't insert themselves in the quarterback market, the Vikings will control the next big move that happens after Washington makes their choice. So now, so then the question is, what does Washington do? If they take Jaden Daniels, now it's game on, I think, for the Vikings. And is New England interested enough, intrigued enough in your offer to move back to 11? Because remember, that's a big move for them to go back, right? Mm-hmm. Especially for a team that they have Jacoby Brissett, but they don't have their answer at quarterback. Or not. Or do they want to stay? And if they want to stay and they take Drake May, now you're down. The Vikings would be down to their second choice, McCarthy. And at what point are you okay with moving up and giving up what you need to give up to get McCarthy? Is it at five with the Chargers? And what does that take? Or is it six with the Giants? And what does that take? Or are you going to hold your breath and wait till you get to Tennessee? right? Mm-hmm. And then not have to give up so much to move from 11 to where Tennessee is. That's sort of in my mind's eye, that's sort of how it plays out.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely onto something, because in my head going into this conversation, my two biggest threats to being able to get our franchise quarterback are, one, the Washington Commanders picking either JJ McCarthy or Drake May. And I think very specifically, I've heard a lot of steam in the last 36 hours regarding them selecting JJ McCarthy.
I have too. Yes.
Now, maybe that steam, maybe, I don't know. It's definitely an intriguing talking point, but I think that is a severe issue for the Minnesota Vikings if they select JJ McCarthy, because then I think Drake May goes to the Patriots. I really do. And then you're stuck with, do you want Jaden Daniels or do you not? And I don't mean that as a slander on him. I just don't think the Vikings are high on him. So then it really puts you in a predicament. Do you force it and say, well, we need a quarterback, so we'll force Jaden Daniels? Or do you try to take Michael Penix Jr. at 23? What do you do there? So that's threat number one, would be the Washington Commanders picking at number two with JJ McCarthy specifically. And the second is exactly what you mentioned, the Giants, because they're not too far away from there. And they are, I mean, I don't care how much they say that they're on Daniel Jones. They had a train wreck of a season last year, and they really didn't have met that many changes. So I really expect them to be vying for a quarterback. And if you're looking at, let's say, the Arizona Cardinals, let's say they're a trade prospect. I think the Cardinals would much rather trade down to six and still have the opportunity to get Marvin Harrison Jr. and then pick up a little trade capital versus going all the way down to 11. That would be the Cardinals forfeiting a really top tier pick that I think that they're looking for. So that is a really big danger if the Giants are in on this, because I think if they're in on it, much like the Minnesota Vikings would be, I think they're willing to give up the farm to go do that, and they have better positioning at number six. So if you're the Cardinals, for example, would you rather take the sixth overall pick and next year's first, or get pick number 11 and pick number 23 this year? I think there's a chance they'd want number six and next year's first. I really do.
Me too.
Which is a really dangerous category for the Minnesota Vikings.
And because it appears they are committed to Kyler Murray, and they lost Hollywood Brown. So, I mean, they need someone. Like, if you're going to remain committed to this guy, I mean, you got to give him pieces. And same thing with the Giants. If you're going to remain committed to Daniel Jones, I mean, you got to give him pieces. You got to give him a receiver here. I think they got to take Malik Nabers, the LSU receiver, probably where they are. If they don't love him, I think there's a tight end that they could probably settle on that people love, Bowers. But, you know, you got to give him a weapon, I think. Because really, at the end of the day, that's sort of something he's not really had, Daniel Jones. He hasn't, I mean, he's had Saquon Barkley, but in terms of a pass catcher, no one that you really love. That steam with McCarthy to Washington at number two is so interesting. And then another person who I follow, Giles, is Scott Zolak,
who's
part of the Patriots Radio Network. And he eviscerated JJ McCarthy a while ago, but has had a mea culpa since then, and went on to X/Twitter with a video saying, I was wrong about this guy. Look at his footwork. Look at his arm talent. Look at him. So, you know, Zolak is, I respect him a ton. I mean, and there's no caveat or but coming here at all. He's great. He's a great follow. You know, he was basically a career backup in the NFL. And now he's been with the New England Patriots Radio Network and a media member in Boston for a decade. But that mea culpa, that sort of walking back the opinion, is not just like his conscientiousness catching up with him. I think he's got information. And I'm not saying it's from New England, but he's got information that JJ McCarthy's going early.
Yes.
And so he doesn't want to be, you know,
the idiot that said that JJ McCarthy's horrible.
Exactly. And then have Washington take him two, or New England, the team he covers, take him three, have this guy become one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And there's a take from, you know, Scott Zolak 3 years ago saying this guy stinks, and now he's, you know, rookie of the year and two-time offensive player of the year, guided the Patriots to a Super Bowl, right? He doesn't want that. So So the McCarthy steam to me is legit. He's going in the top five. It's just to who? Right. It's just to who. So if it's not to Washington, I mean, the best scenario for the Vikings is Washington takes Jaden Daniels.
Yes. 100%.
Because now the Vikings then have New England at three, Arizona at four, and the Chargers at five to get up to take whoever's left between May and McCarthy.
Yep. So let's run this scenario past you, because this is just kind of exploding with decision tree possibilities. Yes, so let's say the Washington Commanders do take J.J. McCarthy at the number two overall pick. Okay. So that means there's only Jaden Daniels and Drake May on the board at number three for the New England Patriots. You're the Minnesota Vikings, and the Patriots say, I think we're picking Drake May. Like, let's say they call Kwesi and said, hey, just FYI, I know you said you're interested. We're going to stay pat. We want Drake May. Do you like Drake May enough to overpay for the number three or overall pick? And I think overpay now extends far beyond draft picks.
Okay.
Do you offer up Justin Jefferson to get up to number three if you like him that much? If they say we're picking him, you either get a quarterback at Drake May or you don't at all. Are you giving him up? Because I've talked to some Minnesota Vikings fans that are not in love with JJ's positioning on wanting the bag and all those. And there's some people that think it's not worth it to pay him, which is that whether that's right, wrong, or indifferent, there's some Minnesota Vikings fans that think it's worth it to trade JJ and not sacrifice future draft capital. But would you trade that if push came to shove to get Drake May at number three?
So then to clarify this, it's 11, 23, and Jefferson.
To be honest, I think there are some people that would suggest that. I think JJ has high enough draft capital status that you could simply offer him straight up for the number three overall pick. Now, I think that's a rich contract, or a rich engagement. Don't get me wrong. I think it'd be more like JJ at number 11, but I think offering two firsts and JJ is too strong. I think they would be winning that trade. Now, yep. To be very clear, you're also trying to get the Patriots not to draft their franchise quarterback. So you're having to overpay, saying, don't pick your guy, take our guy. So if we had to do that, I would. But I think JJ would require three first-round picks to grab. I mean, if you're going to go trade him, I think two first-rounders is the starting point. I really do. Unless you disagree, I think that's enough draft capital to go up to number three. It's just whether or not the Patriots will take it.
So if Kevin O'Connell is saying to me, Wobbs, this is the guy, like I need him, man. This is who we've been after. No one like him was there last year. I mean, I don't know the draft like you do for next year, but it doesn't look like anyone like this is coming next year. This is a guy. This is, I want him. If he said that to me, then I would do that.
Okay. Yeah.
I would trade Jefferson and both firsts this year to get him. Or 11 and Jefferson to get him, whatever would get New England to bite. I mean, you'd obviously start with, hey, we'll give you Jefferson for number three. Now we need more. Okay. We'll give you Jefferson and 11 for number three. Now we need more. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll give you Jefferson 11 and next year's one. Now we want that, want that other one you got this year. Okay. We'll give you 11, 23 and Jefferson. Like it would have to go like that. But I would do it.
Yep. I would as well. Yeah.
Okay. And that's, but what I need the prerequisite to that is O'Connell has to be saying to me, him.
This pound the table.
Be, we really wanted McCarthy, so now we got to sell it for May. So let's not that.
Yep. I would much rather wait until next year if that's the case. Yep. Don't half choose somebody. I'd much rather get the best defensive player in this year's draft in Byron Murphy, get another great player at 23, bolster your roster even more, and then pick next year if that meant not picking your guy.
Agreed. I would rather this scenario appeals to me more than selling the farm for your number two guy.
Mm-hmm.
This scenario appeals to me more.
Mm-hmm.
Lost out on McCarthy, lost out on Drake May, didn't want to sell the farm for our second pick, stood pat at 11, took one of the guys we've talked about, Giles, on the interior or an edge rusher or corner, whoever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Took that guy at 11 and then Bo Nix at 23. And and I don't think you would overtly say this, but you would make sure it kind of becomes known. Like, we loved May. We loved McCarthy. Didn't get him.
Yep.
But we're excited about Bo Nix. We like X, Y, and Z about Bo Nix. He was a winner at Oregon, took a program to these places, whatever, you know?
Yep.
Because the expectation there is like, if it doesn't work out with Bo Nix at 23 overall, you're not getting fired for that.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
You're almost taking a flyer, so to speak.
I think,
especially you because you have two first rounders.
Yep. I think you are. Now, the 23 overall pick, there could be a lot of good players there. mm-hmm. you know, other than Bo Nix. So, you know, I don't, you could also think about just taking another good player, but I'm just mm-hmm. saying I can stomach that, taking Bo Nix at 23, more than I can stomach giving up JJ two or three first round picks for my second choice at the dance. I don't like yep. that.
Completely agree, especially if you are not completely sold on their skill set. Don't give up the infrastructure around them that will help them become great, right? Because yeah. JJ will be an accuracy eliminator for every rookie quarterback that could ever enter our building. So that'd be really hamstringing them in a lot of ways to get rid of JJ when bringing in a rookie. Like, that's yep. the true benefit here is get your guy and give him the best wide receiver in the league and you're going to go make some hay. So I completely agree there. And I think I'd be willing to take a Bo Nix or a Michael Penix Jr., depending on your preference on accuracy and or injury history. I think that could be really intriguing, because the worst thing that happens, if we're exploring the downside and protecting the downside, the worst thing that happens is either you play him and he's horrible, or you play Sam Darnold and you mix it back and forth and we end up with a bad record that only further positions us to go get our quarterback next year, right? If you are in love with somebody next year, that is going to be a really tough scenario if we're not in love with anybody from next year and we don't get our guy this year. I'm not in love with that scenario either. But ultimately, I mean, there's 32 other teams that are vying for their guys. So you gotta work with what you got versus what you hope for. But there are a lot of different possibilities here.
You know, you were just talking and I was thinking as you were talking there, if you miss out on your guys, your quarterbacks, mm-hmm. this year in the top five, you know, you stick there at 11 and pick probably, or you trade back, and this trade back could happen at 11 or 23. But if you miss out on the quarterback, a not bad consolation prize is a team outside of the first round comes into the first round to your pick and mm-hmm. gives you their first next year.
Next year. Yeah. That's not a
bad consolation prize.
No, I think that's actually a fair context there.
Like, let's say you took the D tackle at 11.
Mm-hmm.
You're at 23. Penix and Nix are there. You don't love them. You never did. Yeah, there's a corner you could take. You know, the fourth corner is there. The second Mike linebacker is there. The sixth edge rusher is there. But the Giants are saying, hey, we want to come back up. We're at, I don't even know where they are in the second round, but let's say they're at, 48.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you 48 and next year's one to come up to 23. You know, I mean, and maybe they
gotta explore
more than that. You know, maybe they got to give you their second this year, their fourth this year, and a one next year to come up. Something like that, you know?
Yep.
Because you've yeah. given up some picks here and some trades for Hockenson and yep. the Houston trade.
Yep.
So that's a way to recoup some of those picks, pick up a first rounder next year.
Yep.
That's not a bad consolation prize if you miss out on your quarterbacks.
I actually think that maybe even needs to be the priority, because if you don't hit on this year's quarterback, I think it's evidently clear that the entire Minnesota Vikings organization is setting out to find their rookie quarterback. So if you didn't get it this year, you got to get it next year. I mean, just speaking candidly and realistically. And so putting yourself in a position to actually go hunt them, much like they tried to do this year. And in this context, they weren't able to make it happen. I think you have to go get another first rounder next year to be able to trade up. Because even if you have a horrible season in 2024 and you get a top seven pick, you're still going to have to trade up more than likely to get your quarterback. I mean, just calling that out. So I'd be really in favor of that. So if you can't get your guy in the top five, trading out of 23 to acquire a first rounder next year with someone that you believe to have a pretty high draft pick rather next year, I think that is the game plan. I think that that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So another crowdsourcing nugget from over the weekend, Darnold. Okay. Giles.
Okay.
Not great excitement about Darnold from folks. And
mm-hmm.
one person said something to me that kind of made me come down a little bit on my Darnold opinion, because I was sort of okay with it. I'm like, big arm, mobility, Shanahan mm-hmm. loved him. He's with O'Connell. He was with train wreck in Carolina, train wreck with the Jets. Mm-hmm. I can kind of see this, you know, if Shanahan trusts him to be his backup in a Super Bowl year, I can trust him to be my bridge quarterback until a rookie's ready. Like I could kind of get on board with that.
Yeah.
But someone said something to me that I think it was a Hard Knocks episode when he said, I'm seeing ghosts out there. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Now that you bring that up. Yep.
I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, so this person I was talking to was just absolutely taking the Vikings to the woodshed for Darnold. Like, geez, really can't believe it. You know, he's the guy who sees ghosts, really. I'm like, So that was one of my conclusions is if Darnold has to start more than a handful of games, people are not going to like that.
Yep.
Vikings fans not high on that one.
I mean, we've talked about it before, but I think the signing of Darnold was meant to do two things. One, to have a quarterback that wasn't a complete train wreck in your room. And he's not a train wreck. He's obviously started in the NFL. I mean, he was a backup for the 49ers. You could do worse as a backup quarterback. And I think the second thing they were trying to do is to create leverage. So when trying to trade up to go get a quarterback, that teams don't automatically say, well, you clearly don't have any quarterbacks and I'm going to overcharge you because I know you're desperate. We don't want to appear desperate. Much like the Vikings put themselves into when Christian Ponder was drafted, they were in a position where they had to get a quarterback. And I don't think the Vikings want to do that. That's the stopgap for them when it comes to kind of draft strategy, much like the scenario that we're laying out here. If they're not able to get their quarterback this year, they need to have a guy. And I think that's proven that Nick Mullins is not the guy. They're clearly not going to move it and run it back with Josh Dobbs. You know, it's just they needed a guy in the building. And to be honest, there's not that many other great bridge options that were out there, right? When you think about guys that fit our scheme, he was probably the best option available. Period, full stop.
He's... You know, you do the whole thing where if you put this guy in the draft, how would you feel about him? Where would you put him, right?
Yeah.
You know, and we know he's a 3-4 year veteran, but if he was in this year's, if he was draft eligible, you know, where would you have him on your board? And you'd probably, in terms of winning games for you in 2024, you'd have him ahead of Penix and Nix, right?
Probably, yeah.
For winning this year, you would.
Yep. Yep.
And so from that standpoint, you know, you've got a guy that is a legitimate, capable bridge quarterback. So I think the appetite and the how acceptable is the Darnold signing goes up if you draft McCarthy or May. It is not at the acceptable level if you come away from the draft without a rookie quarterback to start. Then it's not acceptable. So, people like, I think generally like what the Vikings did in free agency. And I guess I'm not surprised with the additions of that. I'm a little surprised that they were as forgiving as they were about some of the losses.
Okay.
You know, with Cousins and Hunter particularly.
Fair enough. Okay.
We've all... Whether you were pro Cousins or anti Cousins, we've all moved on from it and have cast our gaze to the draft. But just rewind a couple of months and people were banging the table to keep Cousins, right? There were Cousins people, right? Okay.
Yep.
So I'm not hearing really from anyone about that now. And Danielle Hunter had more sacks as a Viking than Jared Allen. So no one's complaining about that anymore either. You know, so I thought that's a crowdsourcing sort of takeaway from this weekend that really surprised me. Like, I had no one bummed out about losing Danielle Hunter.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you put it that way for both of those players. I think I've had this sneaky suspicion for a while, but when it comes to Kirk Cousins, for example, I think there's the overwhelming mantra that people are Kirk Cousins lovers and they're here for Kirk Cousins and not the team. And I think, although there are definitely people in that category, I think there's far more people in a category that bought into the Cousins formula, understanding what his upside could be, and also understanding what requirements had to exist on our team for us to extract that from Kirk Cousins. He has to be protected. He has to have a top five offensive line for this to work. I mean, I knew that going into this when he came into the team at 2018. You got to be able to protect him. If you can't, this is all going to fall apart. Otherwise, he has one of the most accurate deep balls in the NFL. He is Mr. Consistent across the board. That is a formula that you can win with, but I think a lot of people thought the Minnesota Vikings didn't either prioritize it or didn't hit on the formula that you need to put around it. And I think people were hopeful that we could do that. But now that Kirk Cousins is out of the building, that's no longer the formula, right? I mean, he's no longer the quarterback, so we're no longer trying to fit specifically around him. Excuse me. Right. So I think people are now just coming to terms with that, that we've clearly traded some draft capital to put ourselves in a 2 first-round pick mentality. Now they're ready to go to the next guy. Let's go to the next formula. It's more about people being aspirational with their team. If I have this, this is what it's going to take to win. I think it just shows the resiliency of the Minnesota Vikings fan base that our goal is to truly win. And until you get a different quarterback, your goal is to try to win with Kirk. And if you want to win with Kirk, here's what we have to do. And I think it's really going to say that. So I think it's really revealed the true intention behind the Minnesota Vikings fan base. And I think with Danielle Hunter specifically, I think at least a lot of the Vikings fans that I've talked to are really excited about the departure of Danielle. Not in a vacuum excited about that, but more specifically, the essential trade to acquire Greenard. And I wouldn't say he was exactly equal in production, but he is far cheaper and far younger. And when you're looking to build your franchise, I think we got one of the best value picks in the entire free agency. One that I did not see coming, to be honest. I'm kind of kicking myself like Giles. It was staring you straight in the face. How did you not see this as a possibility? But now exploring it post-mortem, I think the Vikings really won out here. I think Danielle Hunter is a bigger name and the Texans are pumping their chests that they got this big superstar. And he is a superstar, to be very clear, but I think he's a superstar for another year or two and then he's going to drop off the shelf. And Greenard, he has far greener pastures ahead of him. I think this is one of the best value signings. And I think when you explore all of the free agency signings, I think that is a low-key tone across all of those picks. We got a lot of value. We got people that have pretty high production for pretty low cost. And I think that all goes to Kwesi. I think that's a really big commendation for him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it was a very careful study of these guys are particularly good fits for what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know what? The Pittsburgh Steelers might not value this guy like we do. The Detroit Lions might not value this guy like we do, but they're not going to use this guy the way we're going to use him. We're going to use him this way, and therefore we value him very high. And it's a benefit to us because we are counter to what the market thinks of this player.
Yep.
Now, if you're wrong about that, it's, you know, you're wrong and it doesn't work out. But if you're right about that, you know, you get great value in production. I mean, Van Ginkle and Greenard and you're totally right, because I was like, Blake Cashman would be a great signing for the Vikings. Like, I was watching Houston and looking at Houston, so he was staring me right in the face too, and I didn't even think of it.
Yep.
But I knew Cashman would be a good fix. I knew that on the inside they lack production and depth, and like that'd be a great signing for the Vikings. But yeah, the outside guy, I watched his games, you know, and I'm like, wow, that guy's really good. But I didn't think about him. But I think that's partially because I didn't assume that Hunter was gone either.
Fair enough.
You know, you know, so I didn't assume they were going to be in the market for an edge rusher like that. But career arc wise, you know, they're obviously in a better place there. And, you know, we talked about Brian Flores. I kind of view him, If I'm Kwesi, I view him a lot like I view O'Connell, where it's like Kevin O'Connell was like, I have a feeling was like TJ Hockenson, man, like that he does what we want. Like he can
go get him,
really use him. And that worked. Yep. Like that was good, right? So I think O'Connell is sort of shown his mettle there and can be trusted. And I think Flores is the same way. Where it's like, if he comes to you and is like, this one I really need. No, seriously, like this one really, I think you give it to him.
Yep.
You know, because he's demonstrated that he can work with stuff like that.
And I think it may be obvious, but if we have a top five defense, I think in next offseason, you pay Brian Flores what is ever required to keep him in the building. If that means paying him more than Kevin O'Connell, I'd be willing to explore it. One, because you turned defense around. But I think more specifically, because of the Brian Flores schematics, he clearly prioritizes things that other teams don't when it comes to versatility. And if you can continue on that trajectory, finding value in players that wouldn't otherwise have been valued, I think you're going to be able to really build out your roster at a subpar price. I mean, there's no salary cap when it comes to coaches. I'd much rather overpay and way overpay my coach if that means I can get value players across the NFL for the next 5 years. I would much rather do that. Make Brian Flores assistant head coach, give him a house for all I care. Make him overpaid in every category to keep him in Minnesota if that means to keep a solid defense at a value structure, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think there are some non-traditional and unusual things going on with Flores and, you know, and some things that happened when he was in Miami and how he's trying to handle that fairly or not may be affecting his potential candidacy as a head coach. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of legalese and it's a legal situation. So you got to walk carefully around what you say and how you say it. But it seems to me that there are things there that may hinder him from getting a job, at least in the near term. And so the Vikings should absolutely capitalize on that. Now, that doesn't mean he shouldn't be compensated fairly for that. I guess you'd say unfairly for that, but to his advantage. And you could be creative and find ways to do that, right? Whether it's incentive-based or there's an unusual structure to his compensation. But yeah, I mean, now, there was a little bit of a tail off last year, production-wise for the defense. But, I mean, you know, you also have to consider what his personnel was. And, you know, he had a bunch of injuries, right? So, love to see what he can do with the chamber full of, you know, of his ammunition that he's chosen. Because he was kind of playing with other people's toys last year to some extent. So, can't wait to see, you know, another year into the Flores regime. You're just another year further along personnel-wise. And you really start to get an identity, because we talked about a lot of it was smoke and mirrors last year for him, right? I mean, I think didn't he have the most 3-man pressures and the most 6-man pressures? I believe
he did.
You know, the most cover 2 and the most cover 0. So those are usually that's a diabolical situation there. That's not his identity. That's him like making it work with what he's got. So very excited to see what his identity becomes when he's got a full deck to work with.
Yeah. Allow people to win one-on-ones, actually bring productive players that can perform even outside of the smokescreen. I mean, considering what Brian Flores has done even before entering the building for the Minnesota Vikings, I think people too often forget his pedigree. I mean, he was the play caller defensively for the Super Bowl in which the New England Patriots held the number one offense in the Rams to, I forget how many points they scored in that Super Bowl, but like...
Was it 3? Was it 3 or 10?
Offensive points? It was 3 or 10, one of the two, I forget now. But if you hold the number one offense in the league to that amount in the biggest game there is against Sean McVay, that's a big deal. And when you look at the defense when he was with the Dolphins, phenomenal. Once you get his guys, I am really excited to see him work. We already have some pretty good pieces. I'm really hopeful that we can add a few more pieces in the draft. I think this is really a foundational stepping stone for us, because if we can truly bring in a rookie scale quarterback here, we already have one of the best offensive weapon sets in the entire NFL. If you can really allow Flores to cook here. And I mean, in some ways, the Minnesota Vikings were a top 5 defense when they were able to kind of put up smoke and mirrors, but then they got figured out because they couldn't win one-on-ones. If you're able to put up those same smoke and mirrors, but then win one-on-ones, if you are able to get back to a consistently top 5 defense, you have the weapons that we have on offense, and you have a rookie quarterback that can cook. That is a Super Bowl window if I've ever heard one.
Yeah. Definitely. We've talked about that, right? The rookie scale contract and what you can do with that. Seattle did it with Russell Wilson and the Legion of Boom. I believe the Chiefs, you could look back and say the foundation of their dynasty was with Mahomes on a rookie deal. And I mean, the Chiefs are a great case study, Giles, of the full lifespan of a franchise quarterback. What you have to acquire that franchise quarterback. They made a big trade and moved up to get him. They had a backup a starter in Alex Smith. So Mahomes sat for a year, watched Alex Smith, then took over year 2. Now you're on a rookie contract. You accumulate a bunch of really talented players on big contracts, Tyreek Hill, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, right? Then you have to pay that quarterback. So now you got to siphon off some things, Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins, get some picks for him. Mm-hmm. Who do you keep? Who do you get rid of? They kept Kelsey, got rid of Hill. Like, they're really a good case study of how to manage the lifespan of a franchise quarterback and the seasonality of that, you know? Yep. And they've obviously gotten a lot of juice from you know, squeezing that fruit. I mean, that's exactly how you do it. And that's why Andy Reid's going to be a Hall of Famer.
And I think that'll be the reason that they actually have a chance to go compete for a three-peat, for three Super Bowls in a row. Like, that's actually realistic based on the roster they have. Their defense is still intact. I know they lost Snead to the Titans, but they actually have a shot to do a three-peat. And I don't think I'd ever witnessed that in my lifetime. That, I mean, it's hard to win one, much less two in a row. Like,
I mean, you know, to turn this into a Chiefs podcast, you know, I mean, Valdez Scantling out, Hollywood Brown in.
Yeah.
Probably some an upgrade speed there.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I saw Rashee Rice got into a little bit of some trouble here. So I don't know what his situation is, but he's on the come. I think he's a good player. Mm-hmm. Kelsey's under contract. You got him in tow. You know, they're good at running back. Offensive line is, they've had some pieces cycling in and out of there, but that's pretty good. So yeah, I mean, they're going to be one of the favorites next year. You know, they retained Chris Jones. The Snead loss is a big one, but I mean, they were good before Snead. They'll probably be good after him. Right. So, you know, and Andy Reid is there. And I think there's desire for more. They don't strike me as a group that's like lavishing in the praise and resting on their laurels. I think,
I don't expect a hangover from these guys.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think like they really labored to win that one last year. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said, like after you labor and labor and labor and finally get the job done, it's like you could like take a load off and like lose your edge. But sometimes like that laboring process and then accomplishing that like sharpens you. And it kind of makes you even more dangerous the next year. And that could be what the Chiefs are next year.
Yep. Versus had the Ravens won it. They were considered the best team in the NFL for a big stretch. If you won it, it's like, yep, of course it was us, right? Then you can rest on your laurels versus we had to scratch and claw our way to the Super Bowl in a year where we had no business winning the Super Bowl. I completely agree. I think that's a iron sharpening moment. And I think they're going to come back with a force in 2024.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for the Minnesota Vikings.
Hopefully. Well, and if the Vikings have to contend with them at a high level, it wouldn't be until the big game anyway. So, you know, that'd be kind of cool. And then it'd be a rematch for, you know, from a historical standpoint, you know, Vikings get into a Super Bowl and would play the Chiefs who they lost in a Super Bowl to before you and I were doing podcasts.
If that happens, we're going to New Orleans. That's where the Super Bowl is this year. We're going
to
be there.
Yeah, you won't have to twist my arm. I'll be along for the ride. I'll be there. All right. So that's the end of my crowdsourcing experiment. Anything left in your notebook here before we wrap it up for today?
No, I think that covers it.
All right. Sounds good. Giles and I are going to get together and solve some technical issues on my end, and then we'll be back for more episodes of the Wobcast 2.0 this weekend and all the weeks to follow. So make sure you like, follow, and subscribe. The Wobcast 2.0. You can do that wherever you find all your other favorite football content, wherever you find your podcast. But don't forget, also, we are on YouTube. So if you don't watch us and check us out on that platform, please join us on YouTube. Join the discussion. Once you do all of that, we'll see you there. And we'll see you next time on the Wobcast 2.0. That's going to do it for today. On behalf of Giles, this is Wobby signing off for now. Until next time, Skol Vikings.